The next talk is entitled Stay at Work, Return to Work, a Win-Win for Workers and Employers. Michael Axe is a medical director of the Occupational Health Clinical Centers in upstate New York and is a practicing medicine physician seeing patients over 25 years.
Thanks. The title of the talk is posed as a question. You could probably predict what the answer is going to be. I got interested in this a few years ago because there's a lot of talk that I was seeing about sort of changing the culture, the health and safety culture, from one in which workers get injured at work or ill at work and then get compensated maybe or accommodated maybe or a lot of times go off work. To one in which was called return to work, stay at work, return to work. That is, keeping workers at work or returning workers to at least some kind of work, even if not the same job. And a lot of this, the talk about this was coming from people who were basically pretty, seemed corporate connected, yet at the same time were sort of calling themselves a grassroots movement. And they're also talking a lot about this win-win ideology or win-win idea. So when you have that sort of scenario, at least when I see that sort of scenario, it makes me a little bit suspicious about what they're actually whether what they're actually talking about is really the real deal. So basically, just to I'll give you my conclusions here before I even start, which is is that the a lot of the what I'm going to talk about, you'll maybe I'll give you some details, but basically there's a lot of in this so-called movement of basically professionals who are connected to industry in one way or another, working directly for them, consulting to them, or possibly doing direct care but financially dependent on corporations for their for payment for their services, and that essentially what they're proposing, sounds nice, but is actually really a way in which to sort of further shift costs, as we just heard about in the sort of whole wellness idea, but a way to shift costs which are already shifted greatly away from employers in work-related injuries and illnesses, shift them even further onto injured workers, their families, and others. So that's in terms of the what I'm going to talk about, I'm basically going to address these four questions, we'll just get right to it. The first question is why don't injured workers stay at work or return to work? And the answer to that question sort of depends a lot on where you stand, what your perspective is. In general, I think everybody agrees there's a lot of people who are disabled and unable to work, and that a lot of people, I think most people would agree that people who are labeled as disabled are not necessarily unable to work. There are barriers to why they are not working, but they're physically and mentally, actually, they have capabilities that where they can do work. So from a disability rights perspective, the people who are disabled are unable to work because of barriers that are economic barriers, that are social barriers, and political barriers that do not allow them to work. So failure to accommodate basically or create workplaces that are what I would call ergonomic, that is, that are fit for people who can do fit for everybody, as opposed to just certain people in the population. People who, and I'm going to use this term stay at work, return to work advocates to refer to that group that I talked about a minute ago of various professionals who are proponents of this approach. Physicians, according to them, most of the problem is with physicians and with doctors, that or physicians and with injured workers, excuse me. So that with physicians, there's physicians aren't necessarily trained to do this. There is a lack of time for physicians to do it, lack of communication. What's interesting to me is this idea of that they put forward an idea that doctors actually have a conflict of interest in this. And so how does a treating doctor have a conflict of interest in evaluating somebody for a disability? Well, basically from this perspective, it's because the idea that the doctor is an advocate for their patient, And so as an advocate for their patient, they're unable to either see clearly what that patient's real situation is, or more importantly, they're unwilling to address their patient's real situation because they want to keep a good relationship with the patient, so they'll just basically kind of rubber stamp whatever the patient wants to do or say. And then from the injured workers, as their perspective on the injured worker is that injured workers are afraid to return to work. There's an inordinate amount of fear on the part of a lot of injured workers because they've been injured and they are afraid of going back to work. And then what they call bad faith, malingering, faking, et cetera. From the employer's point of view, as I mentioned, I think workplace injuries and illnesses have the costs of them have already been greatly socialized. The ways that employers do that is that they don't bring injured workers back to work. They don't easily accommodate them. It's either 100% come back to work or nothing. They fight workers' compensation claims. They don't hire injured workers or workers who have been injured. They don't engage necessarily in prevention activities in the workplace to actually change workplace conditions. And I think that's been greatly amplified over the last 6-7 years since this economic crisis began, with a whole emphasis on cost reduction and general austerity kinds of measures. Just made things a whole lot worse. From the injured workers' point of view, I'd say the vast majority of patients that I see want to return to work, or they'd like to stay at work, but they want to return to work or stay at work at jobs that are safe. They don't want to go back to the same job where they got injured in the first place if there's been no change in the conditions that caused the injury or made them sick. And secondly is that the jobs, if they can't return to that particular job or particular workplace, jobs need to be available. They have to be able to go somewhere else and get a job. And again, since the economic crisis, that's really sort of been made much more difficult. And there was a good quote from one of the main proponents of the stay at work, return to work group. And she said, yeah, you know, I get it that, you know, that there's been some economic difficulties and things like that. But if a worker has enough gumption, they can go out and find themselves another job. And so, you know, that's the basic, I think, perspective. So again, who is it that's advocating for this sort of thing? Corporate connected people, for the most part, again, direct employees, consultants or direct service providers, variety of different professions involved, healthcare providers, vocational rehabilitation, human resources and loss prevention, insurance companies. And they're pretty conscious about their sort of strategy, I think, in terms of what they're how they're going about pursuing what they're proposing. So they developed a variety of ways to sort of spread the word through things like conferences. They have their own publications. They have a disability listserv that's seems pretty popular. Professional organizations even, and they target people and organizations on different levels, healthcare providers, policymakers, and employers, all are part of the strategy or targeting. And you'll notice who's not in the picture are unions, attorneys who are involved in workers' compensation or other related sorts of activities, injured workers, and worker-oriented healthcare providers, I think, are not really included in that group. And actually, especially attorneys and unions are seen pretty much as impediments, as seen as putting barriers in the way of people getting back to work. So what is it that stay-at-work, return-to-work advocates are proposing? And that basically there's some representative documents, and sorry, I did this at the last minute, and I forgot to put in the references here, but they're basically the two main ones that I found were the my own profession, the American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine professional group has a big statement on this issue that I think really sort of lays out the argument from a couple of years ago. And in the United Kingdom, very similar kind of a report was commissioned by a rheumatologist named Dame Edith Black. So it's the Dame Black report, I think, that are nice to refer to. So what are they proposing or in general? That, again, the emphasis of most of the proponents are on the doctors and on injured workers. So changing behavior of doctors, changing behavior of injured workers is sort of where I think they see most of the need for action. And with the physicians, it's getting doctors trained on how to assess disability. So there's a standardized way of assessing disability that's being proposed. And secondly is to convince doctors of the need to get injured workers back to work quickly. And there's a study that everybody refers to that's this Cheadle study from a few years ago that, you know, the longer injured workers stay off work, the less the chance there is they're going to get back to work. And so that's the study that everybody refers to, and this is the basis for this idea that what we really need to do is get doctors getting people back to work quicker. So how do we do that? Well, a big issue that they focus on is facilitating communication between the doctor and the employer and the doctor and the insurer. So sort of making sure the doctor and the employer talk to each other a lot, and that the physician also has access and talks to the insurer to get information flowing both ways to supposedly facilitate the return to work. In addition, I think that they are proposing that the physician role be limited, and what I mean by that is that what the physician ought to be doing from this perspective is not really trying to sort of match the worker to a specific job or to work with the employer or work with the union and the employer to try and fit people or get people back to an appropriate job, but is instead really to just say, here's the physical things or capabilities that the injured worker has. And then here you go, and the employer then is the one who then decides what is the appropriate work and work placement decision. In addition, they do recognize they have a sort of biopsychosocial model of occupational health, which is not, I'm not criticizing that as necessarily a bad thing, but and they do advocate for recognizing and treating the psychological issues impeding stay at work or return to work as being a necessary part of the process. And they also advocate for recognizing and treating chronic pain sorts of issues. And then finally, in terms of injured workers, they want to deal rigorously with bad faith. In terms of employers and insurers, what their role is in all of this, is that very little attention is paid to them. That basically there's some talk about if an insurer or if an employer is also dealing, they call it unfairly with injured workers, that has to be identified and dealt with. But there's no details, and there's like I say, it's very little attention paid to that. And you also notice that that what's not included in this list is any reference to primary secondary prevention in the workplace, to fixing up workplace conditions. Because bottom line, I think for a lot of these, for it seems like most of this group, is there's sort of an assumption, and I think in Dame Black's report she actually sort of says it pretty much straight out, that the problems in the workplace, you know, that cause illnesses and injuries have pretty much been solved. We have kind of safe workplaces for the most part, and so that aspect doesn't really need to be dealt with. So there's nothing, literally, there's nothing in this about those sorts of necessary changes. Okay, so just quickly, I have two examples of how this actually plays out, maybe in practice, two sort of counter or extreme examples, maybe. One is in New York State, where some of these sorts of ideas were part of the last workers' compensation reform in 2007. And just to make it brief, that basically there was some ideas about figuring out ways to incorporate incentives for to get employers and insurers to work on these issues in the workers' compensation law. Bottom line is that there was a group that met for a pretty good amount of time to try and figure this out. Employers, insurers, and I think labor unions were involved, and they could not come up with any good way of agreeing on a number of issues about how to provide and pay for vocational rehabilitation for injured workers, what the safety net should be for injured workers who really can't return to work, and what the employer incentives to participate ought to be. And I think to me it looked like the bottom line was that anything that costs money for the employers, they were not going to agree to. And so basically in New York State, as far as I can tell, I mean, this effort as of 2014 has really resulted in pretty much nothing in terms of workers' comp. I mean, I treat patients all the time, and, you know, I really don't see this sort of process being incorporated into the workers' comp process at all. And then the other side of the coin in Washington State, where a significant program has been developed, I think, since 2011 or so, that really does provide a number of ways for employers to participate. But I think, again, the bottom line for this one, it looks like to me, is that the way you get employers to participate is if you pay them and if you subsidize them. So you provide enough subsidies and you pay them, they may participate. But my understanding, again, from Washington State is that even in a program like this, which is voluntary with heavy subsidization, they're having a lot of trouble getting people to participate in that program. So so in practice, in terms of the proposals, obviously employer participation is key. But getting employers to participate is very, very difficult, even when it's pretty heavily subsidized. So finally, are there alternative strategies in terms of that would better serve the interests of injured workers? Because I think I'm not arguing that I'm not interested in getting people back to work or staying at work, but it should be back to work or staying at work at jobs that are actually healthy and safe, right? So in terms of alternative strategies, one, obviously primary focus on control of the hazards at the workplace while trying to keep injured workers at work is a crucial thing that needs to be included. Number two, that this socialization, the ability of employers to socialize the costs really needs to be ended, that employers really have to pay the full burden of occupational health, which means taking care of the worker until he or she, after he or she is injured or made ill, until they are really and truly either rehabilitated, returned to work at the same job, returned to work at some other job, but basically made whole, that the employer has a responsibility, I would argue, to workers until that time. Three, remove all barriers to medical and disability benefits for injured workers, meaning like in New York State, workers routinely get caught in situations where they're unable to obtain medical care while their case is being controverted, especially for occupational disease cases. So accessing disability benefits and accessing medical care is a key thing throughout the process, and they shouldn't be caught in the middle. Four, that professionals evaluating and treating injured workers and evaluating workplaces should be independent, really. I mean, independent of employers. And finally, which I think other speakers have already alluded to a little bit about in other things, but just as Robin did, at least in terms of the construction project, in this too, workers need to be part of the process at all different levels. And what specifically that means still has to be worked out. But that I think that what I mean, at least part of that, is that in terms of how do you make a workplace safe and healthy, workers obviously need to be part of that. But workers also need to be part of, and I think some unions at least are trying to negotiate in their contracts about who returns to work, who stays at work, under what conditions people return to work and stay at work, and light duty programs, accommodation, vocational rehabilitation, all that kind of stuff needs to be something that workers are part of. And as you can see, the way that proponents of this stay-at-work, return-to-work approach are actually approaching it don't include injured workers or unions really much at all. And I think that's a key issue. So just quickly, those are the strategies. And I would say that if you're interested in more details about this, I found out last week that this has been accepted as an article and it'll appear in New Solutions in next year, 2015. So if you're interested in more of the details, you can find them there. Thanks.
Actually manifest itself? Like, how do you get employers to do that actually on the ground?
You mean, well, the first one, well, yeah, I mean, I think on the one hand, our clinic network has the positive aspect to it in terms of every clinic is required to have an industrial hygienist on staff, and so we have the theoretical capability of then offering to an employer to say, look, we have a person who can actually come in and evaluate things and check them out and do controls. And so the idea is that, you know, if we see a particular patient where we think that would be helpful, then it goes to the industrial hygienist, and that happens. Now, in terms of on the ground, how that actually works, access to the workplace we don't have a right of entry. So clearly, you know, that's been a huge barrier. Is that a lot of employers tell us forget it. But I think on the other hand, the way that what happens a lot of times is the employers will then sort of employ their own consultant. So at least they bring somebody in to take a look at it, which we can then critique and we can have some kind of dialogue about. And then we hear informally from workers as well that, you know, even if we don't necessarily go the industrial hygiene route, that we hear a fair amount of the time that, you know, the employer fights the case, but at the same time, they're making big changes in the workplace for other workers, right? So, you know, I think that sort of thing happens. I just don't have a sense of how often it happens.